Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and this is Nintendo World Report's Connectivity Podcast, episode 112. Are you questioning me? We've got three segments on the show for you this week. First up is a discussion on our favorite games of the Wii U's first year, then another round of Name That Pokemon, and finally, we've got a bonus segment on the Doctor Who 50th anniversary. Enjoy the episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this segment of Connectivity, all about our favorite Wii U games a year into the system's life. I'm Scott Thompson. I am with Zach Miller.
Big pimpin', baby.
Always. And Dom Koopman.
Woohoo!
So when you were going to say fedora hat.
Spending cheese.
Our epic Twitter conversation today.
No. Just no.
Got heated. That was a heated debate. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go back. Well, I guess now it'll be like 3 days and re-Twitter. We're going to talk about some of our favorite Wii U games. We have a feature that's been running this week on Nintendo World Report where the staff voted on the top 10 Wii U games a year into its life cycle. We're not going to go over like our full top 10 list or anything like that because that would take forever and likely it's a lot of the same games. But we're each going to just highlight two or three games that we're especially fond of and want to talk about. So that way we're not just all talking about like how great Super Mario 3D World is or something, apart from Zach, who apparently has no soul and doesn't like it.
Don't want it.
Wait, you haven't even played it?
Nope. It's too soon.
Oh, well then your opinion is invalid. That doesn't even count then.
I got turned off on that game thanks to the live show. Everyone was kind of complaining about it for a while.
See, that always happens. We had the Skyward Sword like discussion, I think, too, on the live show. I guess that would have been 2 years ago.
Two or three, yeah.
I feel like that's what happened. It's like everyone loved it, but because everyone had played it, it was like the first opportunity anybody had to like kind of nitpick. And that's what always happens. It's like kind of easier to nitpick little things than to just be like, this was great, and this was great, and this was great.
That's true, yeah. Still haven't played it.
So you need to just stop listening to live shows.
Listening about to podcasts, you haven't played yet. Apparently.
Yeah. Shut it down. I don't know. Zach, why don't you get us started with one of your favorite Wii U games? Let's mix it up a little bit.
All right. Well, I'm just going with my number one because I doubt it's anyone else's number one. It's Wind Waker HD.
Ooh.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. It's even though it's a GameCube game, it's my favorite GameCube game and one of my favorite video games, and the changes they made are really smart. And there's still a Triforce Hunt, but I don't really care because I've always kind of liked exploring the sea, and the Triforce Hunt never really bugged me. So just looks beautiful. I think it's the best looking game on the system.
That's probably true. I think 3D World does have some striking moments, but I mean, I think consistently Wind Waker is probably the best. It's just like that goddamn art style was so pleasant to begin with. And then when you see it so sharp, and just in HD, it just looks so great.
Yeah,
it's definitely a game I like. So I didn't find like how they implement the Wind Waker very intuitive with like how you do it right now with the updated controls.
With the stick.
Yeah, I didn't really like it too much. That's the only problem I have with it. For the rest, I just enjoyed all the way through with it. I had problems with the original like Triforce Quest, but with what I've done with it, it makes it way more pleasant.
Yeah, it's more integrated into the main game.
Yeah.
And I love, too, how they've incorporated the gamepad. It's one of the few Wii U games where I really enjoy having the gamepad. I mean, just having everything down there on the touchscreen, it's so streamlined. The whole game is streamlined. Like you said, the Triforce Hunt in general, and then I think just having all those options down there, your map and equipping items and stuff, it's such a breeze.
Yeah.
And it solves, like, a problem that Zelda's had, I mean, from the start, where you're having to access menus to,
all the time.
Right, to equip anything. So I think it's really smart in that way.
Yeah, and they brought that smart design forward to Link Between Worlds, which I was happy about.
Yeah, I've heard that. I haven't played that yet, but I have heard that. I'll say this, too. I mean, I know we saw like a sweet trailer when the Wii U was first announced for like a HD Zelda game, but I would be happy if they made either a sequel, spiritual sequel, whatever, but something that uses that Wind Waker art style again in HD. I would totally be happy with.
Yeah, me too.
It just looks so great. So I don't know. That is very good though.
There are two other games that use that Wind Waker style.
Yeah, I know the DS games, terrible. But I want good games in HD, no trains.
And they don't really use the art style. I mean, they try to, but it's hideous by comparison.
Yeah,
you know, I haven't played those DS games in such a long time. I kind of want to play them and then look at A Link Between Worlds and just see which looks better, because I hear so many complaints about A Link Between Worlds art style.
It looks great. Whoever's complaining are idiots. I mean, it looks like A Link to the Past, but in 3D.
Yeah. I think part of it is just seeing still images, which with handheld games, that happens a lot. Because
that
it's
is
just
very
like,
true. Sort of like, still images don't look great.
Right, like just low polygon count and stuff. Like the still images look bad, but when you see it in fluid motion, and especially when it has a very good frame rate, it's not much of a problem. Usually. But.
Yeah, I have no problems with the graphics. But yeah, Wind Waker is my number one. I love it. I played it the other day trying to get the rest of the heart pieces. I probably never will, but who cares? I might pop it in once in a while.
Yeah.
It's the one one retail game I downloaded on the system.
Ooh, because you were that confident that you'd never want to give it up.
Yep.
Huh? Not bad. Don, how about one of your top 10 Wii U games?
So I didn't really make a top 10, so I'm just going straight out of my head here.
Oh, sure.
So I think my favorite game on Wii U this year was definitely Rayman Legends.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I still have to play that.
So good.
Of course, that game got heavily delayed by several months. And they've added some stuff, and I feel that they made it for the better. I mean, they added that football, or like you guys call it, soccer game, which I instantly play with my cousins, and they are in love with it. We love our ass off every single time we still play that mini game.
Yeah,
but the levels are so like brilliantly designed, and the interaction with the gamepad is unprecedented with everything else I feel on the system.
Yeah.
Especially with like how they implement like the touchscreen stuff in those levels. I only feel like the Vita and the Wii U can do that. I feel that other versions serve no purpose other than just ticking a box of just being there.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I will say that the Murphy levels I find are great if you're playing multiplayer, but I do think they're a little bit of a chore in single player, just because the AI that controls Rayman when you're controlling Murphy is kind of atrocious at times.
It's not the worst thing ever.
No,
but you have to deal with the pace of Rayman when he is controlled by the computer itself.
Right, it kind of just like slows down to a crawl.
Yeah.
But with another friend or another player, it's not even an issue. It's really great. And so I didn't mind those levels because I played them with my wife. So it wasn't an issue for me.
And one thing that many people have complained about are like the implementation of like the Rayman Origins levels.
Oh, yeah.
Which I didn't have a problem with. I feel they were a nice extra. They look lovely in HD, and it was nice to have them there.
Well, that's how I feel. I mean, yeah, you've got plenty of game in Rayman Legends that you don't even have to touch those Origins levels if you don't want to. I mean, you don't need to play them to unlock anything. I think you can get enough of the looms and everything through the regular levels. So it's kind of, to me, it's just a nice little bonus. And if anything, it just makes you appreciate Legends that much more, because the Origin levels are just kind of boring compared to to what Legends does. Oh, yeah, like I adored Origins.
I love it. I platinumed it.
But I did too, actually, because I played it on PS3. Mm. But play Legends and then play some of the Origins levels that you unlock, and oh my god, Legends is like leaps and bounds ahead of what Origins was doing in terms of level design.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well, I'm going to get it on Vita. I'm excited about it.
They do implement some of the quirks in the older levels into the new versions of these, so they still make it like pretty similar to the rest of the game. They are a bit smaller in size, but hey, there are chunks of extra content that you can enjoy. And I feel that final world in the game was fucking amazing. It's like nothing short of awesome. And if you like the musical levels that you saw like in the trailers and such, you would love this one in the
final. Oh yeah, the kind of like final unlockable world. Yeah, it is amazing.
Yeah. They go so mental and so nuts with it.
They do.
Yeah, it's so amazing.
Yeah, Zach hasn't played it, so I don't really want to like spoil it. But
no,
yeah,
I don't want to spoil everybody who listens to this.
Yeah.
But if you were upset with like the game was delayed, I understand. But you're really stopping yourself from enjoying a game, which is really incredible.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I adore that game. I reviewed it for Nintendo World Report and gave it a 9.5, if I remember.
Oh, wow.
So. Yeah, I love it.
I'm just waiting for a minor price drop because I've got $30 of gift card left, and it just won't move past 40 right now. It's just not moving.
I said this at the time that I think Legends is easily the best 2D platformer I've played since like the classics, since like the 16-bit era. Because to me, what it does is it combines like the charm and like the polish of like some of the like. I don't know, latest Mario and Donkey Kong games, but with just like the insane level design and challenge of like sort of these indie platformers like Super Meat Boy and like Cloudberry Kingdom and those, but it combines it in this like perfect package.
And I love the art style. I really love it in Origins. And I liked it in the Legends. What was that silly little downloadable game we had?
The Challenges app.
That was great.
Yeah, which that stuff's all in the game too. Oh. So. You can do all
And just for the European folks out there, it's now like dropped to $30 in the eShop in Europe.
Oh wow!
So you just need to
get a European Wii.
it used to be €45, and now it's just $30. It's at a very good budget price, so people can just download it and have it on their system forever.
I wish that would come here. Ubisoft dropped a bunch of their prices, and actually that segues into the game I want to talk about, which is Zombie U.
Oh, of course.
Which I believe they dropped the price of on the eShop as well.
I think that's even $20 or something here in Europe.
I'd pay $20 for Zombie U. You keep talking about this game, Scott. You've talked about it all year, and I keep wanting to play it, but
it's not
dropping here at all.
I don't know if you're opposed to used games or not, but you could probably find it cheap.
I'm just opposed to going into a GameStop.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know, maybe if you check eBay or something? I don't know, but...
But really, those price drops are not in North America? That's so odd.
No, yeah, everything's full price still.
They dropped every single piece of Ubisoft content in the Nintendo eShop here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, I think Assassin's Creed 3 is like €15.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, nothing's changed here, which is disappointing.
Yeah, that's super disappointing.
But so Zombie U, so it was a launch game, but still to this point, I mean, it's hard to discount Mario 3D World, but I still think Zombie U Edges is like my favorite Wii U game still to this point. God, it was just, and I haven't played it in a while, and I'm kind of getting to the point where I think I'm ready to dive back in, but it just does such a great job of creating this like, this palpable tension, and a tension I haven't really felt in games in a long time. I mean, maybe the last time was like the original Dead Space.
This
is so much more crippling because of the fact that when your character dies, like, that's it. I mean, you come back, but you're a new character, you lose all your gear, and it's up to you to either go and find your zombie self and reclaim it, or to kind of just say screw it and just move on without
it. So it's a roguelike.
It is. Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
I mean, people say it's like Demon's Souls, but with zombies, basically.
I think it's a good mix of like Demon's Souls with what's another good game? The other parts are really hard to describe because you kind of mismatch and like other games together to combine this colossal beast of a game.
Yeah,
I think I could name four or five games together, and it would still not give a good job of like describing what Zombie U is all about.
Right. It's so unique. And I mean, it's a little rough around the edges. Like, there's no denying that. But I think the core concept is just so interesting. And in building that tension, they do a great job of making you feel kind of helpless. I mean, if you get cornered by more than like one, maybe two zombies, you're pretty much done. You can only take like two or three hits. And the zombies even have an instant kill. Like, they'll like kind of scratch you, which hurts you. And you can only take a couple hits of that. But if they get their arms around you, you're dead. Once they bite you, that's it.
If you have a few items, you can still save yourself. But those items are so sparse that you might as well give up and die.
Exactly. You have sort of this like last ditch like survival move. But it's finite, and you have to find. Yeah, you have to basically resupply it.
So no
and if
hurts.
I, yeah, no, no.
No, but, there's health packs. So you can refill your health.
But even those are really sparse.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it becomes even crazier if you're going to try doing it in survival mode.
Which I did, and I got to the nursery, and then I just stopped playing. What but I did get pretty far.
Because the normal survival game mode, sounds hard enough.
Survival mode, if you die once, it's game over. You don't get to come back. Your save is, like, deleted, basically.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I mean, not deleted, but and then they have leaderboards. So you get a score based on how long you survived, how many zombies you killed, all that kind of stuff. And then you're just put into the leaderboard. So the idea is to get through the game without dying and then to kill the most zombies and, wow. And just survive
if as long as you can. And the connection again, I want to put to Rayman and Zombie U. If I think that Rayman has the best final, I think that Zombie U has the best opening. Like,
oh, the opening is awesome.
Yeah, it just becomes really surreal, and then you're directly dropped in that situation. Yeah, you have no idea what's going on.
Yeah. But it's so good, and I mean, it does all the right things that a survival horror game should do. I mean, you have such limited amounts of ammo, you feel helpless most of the time, your inventory space is so limited, and like it's very much built around sort of creeping around the unknown and just like praying that you don't get caught in the open by lots of zombies.
Did you play the multiplayer?
No, that's pretty much the only thing I haven't done in it. Because my wife wasn't really interested in playing it, so I never got a chance to.
I love to do that because you're just one of the two people plays on the gamepad and becomes the zombie master. And just throws zombies at them like endlessly and with a certain amount of certain objectives in mind. And then the other uses the Wii U Pro Controller to kind of survive. Or I think you can also use the remote in the nunchuck. I'm not sure, but I think you can.
I'm pretty sure you can.
Yeah. But that is also really, really fun and intense.
Yeah, and speaking of the gamepad, one thing it does great too in the single player is anytime you want to manage your inventory or everything, your backpack is the gamepad. So you look in it to find all your items and to equip them and stuff. Meanwhile, everything is still in motion. You're not pausing the game. So on the TV screen, the camera zooms out to third person and you can see around you. So you can see if zombies are coming to like sneak up on you. So when you're managing your inventory or like unlocking a safe or inputting like a key to a door, the world is still moving around you. So you have to be like, you're looking at the gamepad to try to do what you're doing, but you're constantly looking up at the TV, almost like looking over your shoulder to make sure nothing's sneaking up on you.
Huh.
And it's a really cool mechanic, and it's one of the best uses of the gamepad, I think, on the system. So I can't say enough about that game. Like, if you like scary games and you don't mind, just basically only being able to play like half hour, maybe an hour tops, like at a time, because you were just going to be unraveled and unnerved. I think it's really one of the best survival horror games I've ever played. So love that. So Zach, how about another top Wii U game?
My number two is Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
Yes.
Before we head into any discussion about this game, I feel a bit weird about this since I was involved with development of that title.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
How so?
I was I tested every single level in the game before it was released.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So if there were changes to be made in any of the levels, I was responsible for let them know from, hey, this needs to be fixed.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know that. Look at you, Mr. Development side.
So I kind of feel weird talking about this, but there you go. It's my name is in every single version in the credits.
Nice.
That's cool. I'll have to check that out. Wow. That's awesome. So, Zach, what makes this game so great for you?
Well, it's the kind of game where I can get into the zone and lose an hour or more, you know, without looking at the clock.
Yeah, I agree. Runner 2, I was kind of surprised. I've actually never played any Bit Trip game. Which is kind of probably embarrassing to admit, because I know it's sort of a beloved series, but Runner 2 really was a great, like, I probably didn't play it more for than like 2 weeks, but it was a great 2 week span where I was constantly checking the leaderboards and trying to just beat all of my friends and, you know, the listeners of the show and all the NWR staff. And it's such a well-made, challenging game.
Mm-hmm.
Don, I assume you're a fan of it, since I'm assuming you got a paycheck, so you probably have to say you're a fan of it, huh?
No, I didn't get a paycheck. I did it out of love because I was a big fan of the original six games.
Okay.
And I feel that everybody should play them because Runner 2, it is spursed in between the Runner storyline, but the real Runner storyline tells about life and how life is set up and the challenges that you take in it. So I really feel that
there's a storyline.
In the regular beat-em-up games, there is a storyline, and they kind of try tie one or two in between, like the original Wonder and the fifth game called Fate. And the last level in one or two is actually called Flight to Fate. So it actually like one or two is not story heavy at front. It just go nuts with it because they used to be very simplistic in their story level design, so it was always open for interpretation. And one or two, they just went nuts with it. So I feel that if you want to experience like what the real storyline is, you should possibly just still play those games.
I've heard good things about that collection.
I think you can get the Wii U collection for the Wii collection possibly for very cheap now.
Yeah.
If not the 3DS collection, though, like the second game core is a bit janky in that one. But yeah, I mean, as a fan of the original series, I was allowed to do a preview of one or two, upload some footage of that, and then I slowly got in contact more with the developers, and slowly and steadily I was basically helping with their QA testing because they had nothing else.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, I just love that like the art direction. What impresses me most is the art direction is such that you never don't see something you're supposed to avoid. Like, there's so much stuff going on all the time. The backgrounds are lush, and sometimes there's something going on in the background, like Bigfoot's running alongside you.
Yeah.
But you never miss what you're supposed to see. And that's really impressive to me. And that final, you know, I'm a completionist, so I have to get all the gold bars before I move on.
And that's how I played it.
And some of the levels towards the end are just nails on the chalkboard hard, but they're unfair.
Then you don't want to play the final levels of the original one, because they are even more challenging.
Oh, Lord.
Because so the curve of those levels feels a lot nicer, and that made me also kind of get into it and make me also kind of want to help out, because the progression of the levels was way smoother than in the previous games. The previous Wonder. I feel that what makes Wonder so much so tick for myself is like, you have these unwondered levels and then you have three like difficulty settings to go for. So I constantly just play the level when I had the time. And it's kind of addicting because there's always something for you at the other side when you complete it. And it feels so good when you do it.
Well, I feel like the difficulty in Runner 2 is pretty, it ramps up fairly, but then the last level, just there's a spike. And it's like everything you knew going in here, we're going to test all of it.
Yeah.
Which is good for a game like this.
You know what's cool? I'm going to let you in on a little secret about behind the scenes of that final level.
Uh-huh.
It used to be a lot harder.
Really?
Yeah, there used to be elements in that level which I couldn't even complete.
Oh, Lord.
Which they That's removed. Good. So they actually made it easier. So for like a regular bitter fan, it's possibly pretty much doable. But for any newcomer, it's possibly still really tough challenge because of how many checkpoints that level has.
Oh, yeah. I haven't gotten there yet. I recently re-fell in love with the game, and I'm working through the last level, the last world, I guess.
The last world is also my favorite world, like in aesthetic.
It's super trippy. I love it. It's really cool.
Yeah, I think the song that plays on even levels is also one of my favorite songs in that entire game.
Nice. And actually, that's a good point. The music in Runner 2 is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Any of you guys have a favorite song?
I bought the soundtrack on iTunes, but without the little touches that happen in the game, you know, every action has a sound effect. Without those
like
touches,
an accent, yeah.
It's not the same at all.
Isn't that amazing, too, how they like really tie it to the beat of the music?
Yeah.
I mean, it really does like create like a those sound effects usually mesh perfectly with the music.
Yeah, in fact, well, they help. I think they help.
Yeah.
But how they set up the soundtrack is that they combine all the elements of the levels together and all of the segments into one song, and it sounds really lovely, but I can understand where you're coming from. There's something special about reaching for every gold bar and then hearing a little tune that goes along with it.
Yeah.
Talking about the music, I think that's another thing they went totally nuts on, because it used to be more chiptune stuff, which I'm totally fine with, but I'm glad they went the way they went then. Well, it was meant for the series how it was presented, and that was totally fair. But if we're going in a totally nuts scenario, the ways that they're going with the music are kind of, well, insane in its own right. And that was kind of mind-blowing when I first time saw the game, so that really helped. I think what makes me love the music so much is that there's always something like a different tone to it. Because even if they are in the same world, the two songs sound totally different from one another.
Oh yeah, yeah. Even if they have the same, they start out the same kind of background track. As more instruments come in, it differs.
All right, so let's move on. Don, what's another game you would like to talk about?
That's a hard question now. I talked about my favorite. Let me see. Wind Waker we discussed. Let me think.
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Lego City Undercover.
Yes. That was one I was going to maybe talk about. So I know for sure if little Zach had been here, as he planned to, that's one he would have talked about for sure. And yes, that game is fantastic.
A lot of people give it crap for the long loading times, and that's definitely
I'll be one of them.
Yeah.
But it didn't make me stop like loving the game so freaking much.
And you know, I'll say that this is kind of the instance where you get an idea built up so much in your head before you play it that you think it's going to be way worse than it is. Because I think I went in thinking the loading times are going to be so atrocious that when I actually saw them, I was like, hey, this is manageable. Like, I can live with this. So it became like less of an issue for me if I'd just gone in cold and be like, what the hell is going on? So, yeah.
But,
reverse psyched myself up.
But what makes that game so special and so different from many other LEGO games out there, because there are a ton.
Mm-hmm.
So there used to be a little game I loved called LEGO Island.
Yes.
And what those games did very well was like going for a humor and going with an environment that goes along with it. And LEGO City Undercover takes that to a whole nother level. Like, building this entire open world, which you can drive around if you want to, and have an adventure if you want to, so there's either. But the humor they build around it is so incredible, and it made me so smile for the entire way through. It's if you talk about unique experience, that is one unique experience, because I feel that there's nothing out there that just has so much fun with its script and as much. And I played it now in three different European languages. I played it in English. I played it in my own mother language, Dutch, and I played it in German.
Huh.
Since I can speak multiple, so hey, that helps. And every single script of those is also very different from one another, because they play in on the cultural facts of that specific specific language. Yeah.
That's pretty smart.
Because in the Dutch one, they specifically reference a book that was on shelves right at that moment. Which was kind of like insane, but there you go. regardless of language, that script was so well written. And the characters, I love them. I love Chase, I love Frank.
I like the woman who calls you on the gamepad. She's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think that it was when it came out, it was a very dry period for the Wii U. And I feel I played a lot of Nintendo Land back then, and which I liked, and some other launch stuff that I haven't finished before. But that was the game that made me really love my Wii U again after like a couple of months of really dry stuff.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, my wife and I took turns playing through that entire game, and I mean, we thoroughly enjoyed it. I keep like waiting for there to be an announcement that it's going to be ported to other systems, just because I feel like so much was put into it, and considering like the Wii U's install base at that point, and even still now, I would have to think it didn't do quite as well as they would have hoped it would. And I think if they brought that to other systems, it really could do well. And normally I'd like fold my arms and be like, no, keep it on Wii U, just because I like Nintendo, obviously. But it was such a well-made game that I would love everyone
but
to get a chance
to. That's sadly not going to happen because it was paid for with Nintendo money.
Was
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
I figured there was some sort of exclusive deal, but I didn't know how much
that exclusive was tied, that much exclusive deal that was together. Nintendo gave TT Games money.
Oh, okay. Well, yep, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Then.
so that's never going to happen.
Okay.
Well, it's sad. Okay. It's disappointing to me that Lego games that have come out since have not at all emulated Lego City. They've all emulated
each
other.
Right. They kind of have stuck with like the Lego Batman kind of motif and like Lego Harry Potter and all these kind of recent games, which I think those licensed games are getting better. But when you see what they can do when they make an original game, I mean, it was just so so well done, and I was really surprised. I was kind of worried that, because what I loved most about the other Lego games is the license and how they play with it and how they kind of make, you know, like kind of inside jokes about different things about the different franchises. So when that was going to be removed, I was like, well, I'm not like in love with playing these Lego games. I kind of just like what they do with it. So am I really going to like Lego City Undercover? But I did. I really liked it. There were substantial changes to the formula that worked really well.
Yeah.
And there was still like the collectiveness of like the older Lego games, but presented like in a more reasonable and more enjoyable fashion. Like the way that they hide like the very secrets was way more fun and cool.
Yeah, and I felt like for the first time that if I chose to, I could get everything. In other Lego games, I've always been overwhelmed and thought there's no way I'm going to collect everything. But this one felt like it was a world I enjoyed enough, and everything was like. I don't know, like, just kind of, it was smart in the way you found things, and it was easy to find things that I thought this was a world I really could explore and every nook and cranny and find everything there is to find. Yeah.
Yeah, and you also get a reward for them, which is, like, building these, like, massive structures all over town.
Yeah, so you build up your city, too, yeah.
So I built this, the first thing I did was just going for the gigantic roller coaster, which,
Yeah.
Hey, it was a lot of fun. It gave me an additional thing to shoot for. So
I
enjoyed myself, really, yeah.
So let's talk about one more game. We'll talk about my last game here. And I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball for you guys. I'm not going to talk about Mario. I'm not going to talk about Pikmin, nothing like that. I am going to talk about Wii Party U.
Oh, God.
We already talked,
Neil is on the show.
We already talked about Wii Party U for like a half hour.
We did, yeah, just probably a month or two ago now. But I want to stress that, you know, apart from this
month or two, 6 weeks ago.
6 weeks ago? Is that what it was? Okay, so a month and a half, not bad. I just was really impressed with it. I think it was really actually a fun party game. And, I mean, considering the fact that it's basically $10 because you get a Wii Remote Plus, like, if you're still looking for that fun multiplayer game you can play with like friends and family, like casual players of video games, it's something I think Nintendo Land didn't really satisfy. I think what Wii Party U is that game. It just has a lot, like, I mean, it's not going to blow you away by any means, I don't think, but it has a lot of fun mini games and different ways to play. And the baseball game is still my favorite absolute thing of all time. So,
well, going a bit back on it, I actually think that. In some regards, I like Nintendo Land better because I have friends who game a lot, so it makes it more enjoyable. But when I have just family over, like Wii Party U is a better choice.
Exactly, and that's the distinction for me. Like, yeah, if I have some friends over who also play video games a ton, like, yeah, it's fun to go through Metroid and Zelda, you know, and those kinds of things in Nintendo Land. But when I'm playing with family or just like friends who don't game much, Wii Party U is the much better choice. And it's actually just a lot of fun. I mean, it's probably one of the better party games I've played in a while. I was just pleasantly surprised by it. So I'm just throwing it out there. I think I put it number 10 on my list of top 10. So it's not like my favorite thing of all time, but I just want to make people aware of it. I think it gets overlooked. You just think, especially given the fact that it's really a $10 game, you kind of just, you ignore the fact that maybe it is good. And it is. So
I think I'd rather just buy one of those Mario or Luigi Wii U pluses. I also don't know anyone who really likes to play video games.
Exactly. So it's not going to be for everybody. But if you're looking for a game that gives everybody something to do, a la like Wii Sports for the original Wii, I think this is one of those games.
You know, yeah, Wii Sports, I got a lot of mileage out of that, I will say that.
Yeah.
The game I think I got the most mileage out of was possibly Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed.
Oh, that is so good.
That is another good game, yeah.
I feel that game gets nowhere near as talked about as it should.
Yeah, I don't know why. I guess just because it was a launch game and it was just kind of overlooked. But that is a very good game, actually.
It just trumps Mario Kart 7 in every regard. Jeez.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
because it really like evolved like the original in something that was very special. Like all of the tracks were really well made, and they added some stuff from the original too. So that single player stuff, like multiplayer stuff, local, the online stuff, like a very good multiplayer game at launch.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. I think that's maybe on Nintendo World Report's official top 10. I'm not sure, but you, the faithful listener, can check that out. I think we just started it a couple days ago. I think as of now, we're up to numbers, let's see, 10, 9, 8, 7. So I think 5 and 6, but probably by the time this episode's up, I think we should have ran through everything by then. Mm-hmm. So take a look at our official top 10. And in the comments, let us know. What's your favorite Wii U game so far? Maybe apart from Mario 3D World, because that seems like the obvious choice at this point.
Mm-hmm.
What have you enjoyed in this first year?
The obvious first choice is incorrect.
Says the guy who hasn't played it.
He says without having played the game.
Yeah, absolutely. So a typical internet commenter. Well, Don, Zach, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
The night any other way, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we will talk to you guys later.
Yep.
Bye.
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 What?
Oh, hey, guys. Well, I didn't even need to say your names this time.
Well, we kind of know who it is.
Not many people visit.
Well, yeah. Kim, you look terrible.
What? It's all those drugs.
Have you continued to stay here? It's been like 2 or 3 weeks since we last met.
What? No, I totally have stuff to do other than this. We don't know.
All right.
She's lying.
I mean, Becky, I just want to say this place is really starting to look nice. It's starting to look like a real game studio. You're doing a great job as the janitor.
It's so clean. I'm so proud of it.
You're doing really well. I'm really proud of you.
Thank you.
As you guys can see, got a new suit. Really excited to use it. Kim, do you, like, are you eating?
just, you mind your P's and Q's. Let's start the game.
All right, let me just take a sip of this new Red Bull Zero.
Seems like product placement.
Mind if we can
right
edit
there.
That out for whoever wants to support us?
Product placement.
Angle the can towards the camera.
So they can see it.
All right, everybody, you know what time it is. It's time for everyone's favorite game show. Name that.
Pokemon!
Pokemon!
We gotta work on this timing thing.
All right, everyone, you know how it goes. I have top 30 Pokemon on the board. Now, you guys will pick a number 1 through 30, and I'll give you that Pokemon. I'll name different. I'll give you a description from each generation. We'll go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth until somebody gets it. Of course, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth means that we'll only have 3 tries after that. The point disappears. First one to 10 points wins. As soon as somebody gets 5 points, we throw power-ups in the game.
Woo!
And as always, I'm right, you're wrong. So, any questions?
Sucks. No, let's do it.
I have a question.
Okay, well, there was one question, so you're already off to a bad start. The question is, which generation are we doing this time? We're doing Generation 3. That's right, the worst generation. Because let's be honest, nothing beats Heart Gold, Soul Silver, am I right?
In my opinion.
I didn't play that one.
Well, you should get on it.
I should. I guess I could put down XY and do some retro gaming.
Retro.
Retro.
Because it's all special now.
But I know these ones, so.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. The competition's going to be high.
Okay.
All right, guys. Well, since I can't seem to find a coin, today we're going to be doing something a little different. I'll be rolling a 20-sided die. So, I want each of you to say a number. Whoever's closest to that number goes.
16.
Becky, number?
No, me first.
Dang it! I was gonna pick 17, you jerk!
Kim, 16.
16.
Becky.
How about 7?
It was 12. Kim goes first!
Woo! Okay.
All right, Kim, pick a number. Top 10, 30 Pokemon on the board. Top 30 Pokemon, top 10 Pokemon on the board.
26.
26, all right. All right, all right. The beautiful flowers on its arms have toxic thorns. Don't even think about picking those flowers.
Hmm.
Fucking name that Pokemon. Name that Pokemon. Come on, name that fucking Pokemon. Come on, name the Pokemon.
So flowers on its arms. Like, I don't know. Little Leap? That has like a flower thing. No, wait, Roselia!
Not
Roselia!
You totally guessed Lily first!
To Becky! Becky!
It's my turn now?
The more healthy the Pokemon is, the more pleasant its flower's aroma is. Its scent deeply relaxes people.
It's Roselia, isn't it?
Let's see, judges. It is Roselia!
Yay!
Point to Becky!
I knew that.
It was totally my guess before
I know
you
did. But you answered wrong!
I'm just trying to make her, you know.
Uh-huh.
Just let down her guard. Sell the tactics.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you. I really do.
Yeah.
My heart of hearts, I believe you.
We'll see.
Guys, I gotta tell you, this Red Bull Zero tastes delicious.
Sure it does. It's gonna give
you know what
cancer.
Goes great with a Red Bull Zero?
Some calories?
Cancer.
Some Pokemon! All right, Becky, it's on to you. No, pick top 30 Pokemon on the board. Come on, top 10 Pokemon. Let's go.
How about 11?
11? Well, we could go with 11 if I could count to. I got it! Okay. Let's see. It is said to make wishes come true. While it sleeps, a tough crystalline shell envelops the body to protect it from enemies.
Oh, is it Jirachi?
It is Jirachi!
Jirachi the Wishmaker! Oh, yeah.
It is the Wishmaker. We remember that from Pokemon the movie, where, you know, the guy who voiced Plankton also voiced Mewtwo and probably Jirachi.
Oh, God, I didn't know that.
I know that half of that is true. All right, Becky, it's Not your turn. It's not. Kim, it's on to you. Top 10 Pokemon on the board. Three. Top 10, 50. Come on, let's go. Top 50 Pokemon on the board. Three? All right.
Must three. Say it three times. Except now you said it four. You ruined my joke. What? What was that about?
All three. Right, here we go. Number three. It begins dancing as soon as it hears cheerful, festive music. This Pokemon is said to appear when it hears the singing of children on hiking outings.
It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, what?
It likes to dance, Kim.
Maybe
let it be.
Maybe I didn't invite it to my party.
Too bad. I did.
You're just inviting people to other people's birthday parties?
It's the ultimate party crasher. Okay, I think it's... I don't know how you... It's Ludicolo? Yeah, I guess... Yeah, that guy. Ludicolo? The cactus one with the lily hat on. Cactus one.
Looks like a pineapple.
Let's go to the judges. Let's see if that's acceptable. Ludicolo is acceptable. Cam, point goes to you. 2-1, Becky still.
Yay.
Becky, ball's in your court.
No, I need to, top 15 I need Pokemon to keep on the board. It up here. Come on.
Come on. Top 50. Let's go. Top 10 Pokemon. Name that Pokemon.
So is it
come
top
on.
10 or top 30?
top 10, 50. Let's go.
Because that totally makes sense.
Pick 12. You should pick
no.
12.
I'm sorry. Wait. Becky, are you questioning me? Because I'll just let it go right back to Kim.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No. I want it.
Keep please. Questioning, man.
No. Shut up.
I got a point to make up.
Nobody likes you.
Oh, everybody likes me.
Nobody likes you. I totally mean, have more
fun. Hey, voters and people who write on the forums, vote who you like more, Becky, Kim, or me. There is a right answer.
No, there's not. We're intolerable. How about 20?
Alrighty, 20 out of 50. For food, it digs up iron ore. It smashes its steel body against others to fight over territory.
Ooh. Is it maybe Lairon? Or however you say
it. It is Lairon!
Woo! Yeah!
3-1, like, Becky.
See, guess in evolved forms this time. What?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I'm tired of losing those points.
I'm mixing it up here. In the worst generation. Hey, and remember, if you don't like what I'm saying, tell me about it. Or don't. Because, you know, I'm not a fan of the Hoenn.
He will find you.
He will find
you. Eh. Let's just talk about how great Scizor is. Like, seriously. All right, Kim. It's back in your court. Top 50 Pokemon on the board. Top 10, 50 Pokemon. Let's go.
One.
Wow, we're going all the way back there.
Ooh.
Inside its body is a place where it keeps a small flame. Hug it! It will be as warm as a hot water bottle.
That's aww, that sounds great. I mean, I want one. It's kind of cold out right now.
It's precious. I know, it's freezing. It's like 21 degrees here.
It was snowing tonight in New York City.
Oh, wow.
Oh, neato. I mean, I was wearing shorts today, but that's neither here nor here. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Let's go with Torchkit.
Torchkit.
Charmage.
Let's see. Torchkit is not a Pokemon, so it goes to Becky.
Oh, shut up.
I'm kidding. Point goes to Kim.
Dang, I was like, another 3 points?
3-2 if the score in my head is correct. It's 3-2 to yep. Becky.
Yeah, I need to take a Pokemon diction class.
Apparently.
You do. Or you just watch the anime.
I do. I do.
Sure you do.
Becky, balls in your court. Top 10, 50 Pokemon on the board. Top 10, 50.
15.
Name that Pokemon. 15, name that Pokemon. Name that fucking Pokemon. Come on. All right. It is the world's laziest Pokemon. When it's lounging, it is actually saving energy for striking back.
Oh God!
There's sure like, it is.
I know this this evolution chain, and I'm like staring at this, going, "What do I guess?" Is it slacking?
It is slacking.
Yeah. You got
4-2,
easy
Becky.
One.
Kim, balls in your court. You are still
was an easy one.
Behind.
Yeah, you are. What?
Top 10, 50 Pokemon on the board, Kim. Come on.
25.
You know, before we go to 25, Kim, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Badly.
You know, kind of not winning this game, so that kind of sucks currently.
Sucks for you.
You were really confident coming in. What happened?
Well, I was kind of stupid on the first
question. Yeah, a little bit. At least it's not the well, hop.
Let's go over to our again. To our leader right now. Becky, how does it feel to be winning right now?
It feels great. I like winning.
Yeah, tell everyone a little something about yourself.
I like winning.
That's a lie. She hates winning. Perpetual liar, this one.
You want to start something? You want to go?
I took your broom, okay? It was me.
You're homeless. You live in this studio.
It's a damn fine studio, though. Pretty clean.
I should stop cleaning this place. Kind of makes
if
the
if you guys want to fight, like, I'm okay with it. I'm just going to sit here on the side and drink my Red Bull Zero.
Oh, God. We gave him that.
Quenches the thirst and keeps you up at night. Nah, Red Bull Zero.
Like
so, whose turn was it?
It's my turn.
25.
Yeah, Kim?
It is Kim's 25. Turn, sorry.
Number 25.
It's like, it's my turn.
Top 10, 50 Pokemon on the board. All right. Where is my favorite 25? This one. All right.
What?
Its howls can be heard over 6 miles away. It emits all sorts of noises from the ports on its body.
Is it Exploud?
It is Exploud.
Exploud!
Exploud!
Oh, yours is better.
I know it is. So, what's the number one rule of name that Pokemon? What's the number one rule of name that Pokemon?
Scream it.
Josh is right.
Josh
so,
is right.
So, moving on. The score is 4-3. Still Becky.
Topic kills
Becky.
People. That's
name a Pokemon. Or name a number of a Pokemon.
9.
Top 10, 50 Pokemon on the board. We're going to number 9. Is the biggest of all Pokemon. It can dive to a depth of almost 10,000 feet for only one breath.
I know this one.
Wailord.
No.
It is Wailord. 5-3 Becky. Picking it up. Two notches over Kim. Kim, ball is in your court. And what? Hold on. What's that I hear?
What?
It's time for power-ups. Power-ups.
But it's my. It's just for me,
one,
right?
Use them wisely.
Wait, what did Becky say?
I said it's just for me, right? She hasn't gotten a five
no,
points
it's for both
yet.
Of you. So you each get this power-up. Here, Kim, this is your power-up.
Oh, man, it's heavy.
And Becky, here's yours. I'm just going to stand over here out. With my Coke Zero and just take a big old a sip.
If you don't want to look like a Wailord, drink a Red Bull Zero.
Whatever stop Zero wants to sponsor us, I'm totally okay with.
Kim needs to stop talking.
So, Kim, ball's in your court.
Two.
You have your power-up card, please.
Two.
Which, what did you just
say? Two.
Two?
Two.
I heard numbers 43, so we're going to get a 43.
Duo!
Oh, that's quite a ways from 40.
Known as the Desert Spirit, this Pokemon hides in the sandstorms it causes by beating its wings.
Okay. I think it's Flygon.
It is Flygon!
Yeah!
Dang, we're just trekking through this.
Man, this is
5-4. 5-4.
Way more successful than
Becky.
Last time.
Right? Watch this, we're going to fall apart.
Ball
now.
Is in your court.
That's a pretty ball. Where'd you get that, Walmart?
Made it myself. Let's move on. I have lots of free time. Wow!
Whittled it, lacquered it up. Pretty nice.
How about 33?
72 sounds good to me!
Yeah, that's totally close.
Think
it always
obeys
checked. The commands of a...
It's all that Red Bull Zero.
Sorry, wait, Kim.
Cancer, I tell
you. Sorry, were you?
Cancer and cancer.
Kimmy, are you talking back to me?
No.
No. No. What? No, I wasn't talking back. It was merely a suggestion. It's because I care deeply for you, Josh.
In your health.
Kim, I'm going to take one of these points.
What?
Hold on, I'm taking one of these points, and I'm going to give it to Becky. Becky,
no!
you're up
oh,
6-3.
Yay.
So... And it's currently
bitch.
Yours.
You son
so,
of a bitch!
This Pokemon. Are you questioning
me?
Are you questioning me? I'll take it.
No, I don't think you do, more. Actually.
Seven to two, Becky. I can keep going.
Yeah, I'll take three points.
I was clearly not questioning you.
7-2, Becky. We can keep this going.
3 points. That's not even what questioning means. There was no question mark.
So, right now it's 7-2. I probably messed up the math somewhere. Becky, it will always obey the commands of a skilled trainer. Its behavior arises from its living in packs in ancient times.
Oh, dang. I have no clue on this one. It's like the first one I've actually been stumped on. Shut up. I hope you get it wrong.
I'm not quite sure either, but I'm excited.
I'm trying to remember which ones are Gen 3 now. I was like, wait a minute, I have an idea, but I don't think that's right.
Not Marowak.
No, not at all. Okay, so it lived on Pax in ancient times. Is it... Oh, man. That bug Pokemon? It's like a little, like, scorpion Anorith, I think. Is that what it is?
It's Anorith?
Yeah, is it? Maybe? I don't know.
I think you're wrong.
Can't yeah, I was right. totally wrong. I realized back. That after I said it.
Oh, man.
All your points are on the line.
It's like,
right
wow,
here.
That made no sense.
I'm willing to give them back to you. You just got to get it right.
Do I get another hint thingy?
Oh, that's right.
Well, you're supposed to read a second one. That's how it worked before.
I don't want to, Cam. You're really mean. You're really mean. This Pokemon gives obvious signals, like I do, when it is preparing to attack. It starts to growl deeply and then flattens its body. This Pokemon will bite savagely with its sharply pointed fangs.
Okay. Weirdly, Becky's was more helpful. I think I'm going to go with Myena.
Myena?
Yeah, Myena. Yeah, well, I'm going off of
Myena.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, hey. That totally makes sense.
The score is now 5-6. Still, Becky, but you got all your points back in plus one.
Woo, woo.
Woo. Yeah.
I don't know if that math works out.
Way more sense than mine did.
So, Kim, ball's in your court. You can tie it up right now.
No, she can't.
Or no, wait, no. Oh, wait, it's 6-6 then.
Yeah, that's what I thought it would be. Okay.
Sorry, I actually did write this down, and I did take away all your points, and I had to add them all back. So it's 6-6 right now.
Wait a minute. I don't know.
Well, because he said before it was 5-7, if I got my points back, that would have then switched it, and then I got this one right.
See, the math is totally screwed up. I'm like, wait, what?
I'm sorry, Becky, are you questioning me?
No. I was confused.
It's 6-6.
Sure.
The game is tied.
10.
Let's move
Fine.
On.
Well, whatever. Kim. Just go.
Let's go with 6.
No, you know what? You're both questioning me. Let's go with 3.
I did.
It lives deep in forests. With a leaf on its head, it makes a flute whose song makes listeners uneasy. Much like I'm sure you two are feeling quite uneasy right now.
Okay.
That's a threat, I think.
Well, I mean, he does warn us before a threat, so. Well, let's go with the really weird dude. Is it like Nuzleaf?
Aw, dang, that's what I was going to say.
It is Nuzleaf!
Ah!
7-6.
He was
Kimberly
out.
Elizabeth Keller.
That's not my middle name.
It is now. Are you questioning me?
No, it's just merely.
Kim, you're out of the game!
Son of a
Becky,
bitch.
It's all you.
Woohoo!
All you. Becky?
Let
seven,
her screw this
it's
up
for seven
herself.
7-0 awesome. Right now. Or it's
I
6
was
to nothing.
Merely you stating not, a fact.
Kim, are you in the game?
Stop arguing, Kim.
Becky.
If I'm not in the game, I'm just going to hang out here. I kind of don't have anywhere else to go.
She lives here. Yes.
It's your move.
I will pick
move
a number, and
no
it will
one.
Be 11.
Pick a number. 11. All right. 11. Well, we have all the time in the world. It's just you and me playing now.
11. I think I picked this number before.
Leaves grow out of this Pokemon's body. They help obscure this Pokemon from the eyes of its enemies while it is thickly overgrown forest. It's in a thickly overgrown forest.
Is it Tropius? Or it's like, I think that's what it's called?
It's not Tropius.
Tropius. Oh.
All right, Kim. Kim, you're not playing. You're out of fucking game. Becky.
Hey, how's it going over there?
Doing great. I got a question wrong. So it's kind of great that you're not here.
Strongly developed thigh muscles give it astounding agility and jumping performance.
I got an answer over here. Just saying.
Dang. No, you can't answer.
Woo-woo. Know the answer.
You're not allowed to answer.
I'm not. I'm Becky, just saying I know it.
It's great. So what's going on now?
I think you get a second shot.
Okay. Well, Kim, I'll throw it back to you.
I get a second shot.
If you get it wrong, you're out of the game again.
I'll catch it. Kim? I think it's a Grovyle? Grovyle?
It is Grovyle, so I think you're cheating and you're back in the game.
I ain't cheating.
Now 8-6.
He's a freaking starter. I know my starters.
All right, Kim.
I just hated Trico, so I have no idea anything about him.
Yeah, I didn't pick him.
Get back in the game, pick a Pokemon.
I will pick number 4.
Number 4?
Yes. 4 for 4.
Going to 33.
That's
its
exactly
short arms stretch when it throws punches. Its technique is equal to that of pro boxers.
So it's boxing Pokemon. What up with that?
Right.
I think
pick these guys at random. Don't know what to tell you.
I think it's... Wait. So it has short little... Wait, say it one more time. Sorry.
Its short arms stretch when it throws punches. Its technique was equal to that of pro boxers.
Just guess something and get it wrong.
It's been a little while since I've had this.
I just guessed.
Guys, hold on. It's been a while since I had a drink of this Crystal Pepsi. It's delicious, so I just gotta go for one more.
Sounds like drugs.
All right, I'm sorry. So what was your guess?
Breloom?
That's my guess. Stop taking my guesses. Especially now that you're ahead.
It was Breloom! 9?
Oh,
6.
Shit.
Kimberly Elizabeth Keller. All right, Rebecca James Holiday.
Why does everybody say James?
Is that your middle name? We all know it.
No, you ready to take it back? Not. Yeah, I'll try.
All right, pick a number.
How about 7?
All right, number 7. A discarded bug shell that came to life. There's a legend that peering into the crack on its back is said to steal one's spirit.
Shedinja. You know,
they said that about my ex-girlfriend once. If you stared at a crack, she'd steal your soul.
Ew.
Anecdotes.
Shedinja.
Sorry, you were saying? Shedinja. You're right.
I knew that one.
It is Shedinja.
Yay for 9, researching 7. Creepy Pokemon.
We did write
that. Oh, right. You guys did write that.
We did do that.
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
That was
without
fun.
Kim's help.
Right. I was
It was funny because I'm hilarious.
You were flying over to the Netherlands. So.
Okay.
Kimberly Rebecca Holiday Keller the Third.
The Third.
Are you ready for
your really common name?
That's a really common name.
I'll go with 13.
With anything, it's bad luck. With any luck, it's bad luck.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
It can instantly freeze moisture in the atmosphere.
That's it?
That's the whole thing. Well, I'm getting a drink of this Bud Light. It's delicious. I just can't stop drinking this.
God.
Bud Light. It's.
I don't know. Let's. I don't know. Regice, maybe?
It's not Regice. Becky.
Hmm.
Oh, God, all of them are the same. All right, here we go. This Pokemon has the power to instantaneously freeze moisture in the atmosphere. A dazzling cloud of diamond-like ice crystals forms around its body.
Sorry, can you say that again? You kind of cut out there.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing, because it's the same thing, but the other half of it is a dazzling cloud of diamond-like ice crystals forms around its body.
Sorry, you keep cutting out at the end.
Yeah, you're cutting out.
I'm not cutting out, I'm right next to you.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I know, it's weird, you're digitizing in midair, and you're just kind of like...
I'm just freaking out.
I can put my hand through you, it's really weird.
I'm digivolving. Get off my back. A dazzling cloud of diamond-like ice crystals forms around its body.
We got that.
Okay. Got that part. Got it that time. Ice types? There weren't really that many ice types in that generation, I think.
Yeah, no.
I'm thinking... Oh, God. Is it...
Not Pidgeotto.
Ice crystals around its body. I have no clue. Regice would have been my guess, but... Oh, wait. Okay, no, it's probably not Sfeel. There's another one. It's not Glalie? I think...
Is that your guess?
Yeah.
Skull-like thing?
Yeah, it's like Snorunt Sivall form. It looks like a giant, like... angry-looking face with horns. Kind of looks like Satan.
Yeah, he looks like a freaking skull.
Looks like Satan a little bit.
He's an ice type?
Satan yeah, is the correct I mean, it's Glalie. Bringing the score up to 8-9.
Son of a bitch.
All right,
yeah, Snorunt, Glalie. It's an ice type.
Yeah, it just Glalie. He looks terrifying.
I know, right?
It is Glala Lalu.
Yay!
So... It's still 9-8 you.
Oh, cool.
Don't win. Come on.
Wait, I'm planning on winning. Him. I think I'll try to win.
It's my turn.
Can you pick a number?
It's my turn.
Yeah, it's Becky's turn.
Top 50 Pokemon on the board.
My turn!
It's Becky's turn.
Kim, no, it's not. Listen, I'm right. And because of that sobbing, Becky, it's your turn.
Yay! Number one.
Oh, number one. All right, I guess we're doing this.
Goody.
I gotta stop doing this at random. It eats just 3 leaves in a day. It is satisfied. Other than that, it sleeps for 20 hours a day.
Scloth?
It is Slackoth!
Oh my gosh.
Slackoth, that thing. Whatever.
I'm just gonna give it to you.
That was close. Right,
9-9.
Squad.
9-9.
Yeah! Kimberly, Joshua.
Game winning question.
I do love my middle name. Let's go with number 9.
Number 9. Are you sure you want to do number 9?
Because you may end up stuck at number 9 while
number
I'm
9.
At
10. Number, let's do this.
Let's do this.
Do it.
Going down. All and if right. I lose, I'm going to beat you up in the parking lot. Just saying.
What? Well, good thing I don't leave here ever.
I didn't say that.
I have never seen the parking lot.
It will try to guard its trusted trainer with its life. It has the ability to see the future.
Ooh. That was an unexpected second part.
Yeah.
I think it's...
Hold on, guys. What? I need to drink this...
One last.
Guys, hold on, okay? Can you just...
I'm waiting.
Calm your...
I'm chilling.
Waiting on you, come on.
Jesus, I just gotta have this Heineken. This is a really great Heineken I'm drinking right now.
Sounds like they're just insert word here.
I'm a big fan of the Atlanta Falcons.
That's great.
We good?
Yeah, we're good.
Got it now? Clear?
Am I back?
Maybe?
We've been waiting on you this whole time. Gardevoir! Name that Pokemon.
Gardevoir.
Becky, what do you think? You think she's right?
I can't say because... Yeah.
No, just tell me. Do you think she's right?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't decide the winner this time, Becky. You did.
Because she's right.
She's right. She named that Pokemon.
So it's 10-9. Close game. Close.
That's fine.
Game. But
maybe I don't. Maybe I can't beat you up in the parking lot, but I will beat you up in the bathroom.
Gosh. Well,
Kim, you did talk back to me.
Hey, so did Becky. So,
no, I didn't. No, I didn't. That's a lie. She's a liar.
All see, right. She's talking back to me, too. She can't be
stopped. I'm talking
back
to her, not you.
She can't be stopped.
Listen, I like spunk. I like the spunk. So, Kim, I'm going to give it to you. Next time, just, you know, remember rule number one about name that Pokemon.
Josh.
I'm right.
Josh is always right.
I'm always right.
Look, I embroidered. It's on the wall. It says right there. Josh is always right. Just saying.
Thank you. That's
my
beautiful.
Middle name is Joshua, too. Like... So, I mean, I get it. I feel you.
Next time, I'm going to disqualify you for real, though, just so you know.
What?
Huh? I can't hear anything.
And that's it for Name That!
Pokemon!
Pokemon.
Pokemon!
Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Don't forget, you can send listener mail to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you've got a chance, please rate and review the show on iTunes. Keep listening for a bonus segment on the Doctor Who 50th Anniversary Special.
This bonus segment of Connectivity. I'm Scott Thompson. Today I'm joined by Nicholas Brick.
Hello there.
Athens. And Amanda Albert.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about the Doctor Who 50th anniversary that was just, I guess about 2 weeks ago now. The other Doctor Who crew is back together and ready to go. And I think first we're going to talk a little bit about the Night of the Doctor, the sort of surprise webisode that came out, the week before or maybe just a few days before? I can't remember.
Paul McGann's 54th birthday.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Wow. A nice little birthday present for him, getting to reprise that role, at least, you know, on film. I like how they play that up. So the Night of the Doctor starts and there's a ship crashing and the TARDIS... lands on the ship, and we see a woman look up and notice that the doctor's there, and it's
Lord Byron.
Yeah. And he jokes, and he says, I'm the doctor, but probably not the one you were expecting, or something along those lines. Nice little sort of wink to the camera there, which was a nice touch.
I love that they start with his voice first.
Mm-hmm.
Right, before they show him.
Yeah, just if you're a dork and you recognize the voice.
Mm-hmm. Which you probably did.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
You were probably screaming before you even saw him.
I didn't really get surprised because I already knew he was in it before I watched it.
How did you know? Oh, because you went on the internet?
I was on the internet. And I just saw it and I was like, oh, cool, yeah. And the rumors had been going around for a while, so I was like, yeah, it's got to be him. It's got to be him.
Yeah.
Like,
I woke up at 5 in the morning.
The only time they're going to do it is going to be now.
Yeah. So it kind of provides a little backstory into how we get the, I guess, the War Doctor is what they eventually settle on calling
doctor.
Him by the end of that.
The Hurt Doctor.
The Hurt Doctor? Yeah, there you go. That's pretty good. So yeah, so the ship crashes. He tries to save the solo pilot, but once she finds out that he's a Time Lord, she doesn't want to go with him. I guess sort of implying exactly how bad the Time War's been between the Daleks and the Time Lords, that she doesn't trust him, and says something along the lines of, you know, why don't you go and, you know, keep fighting and destroying more and more planets and solar systems and all that kind of stuff. And so he stays on the ship and crashes. And then he's saved by, and Nicholas, you mentioned it, but who is it that ultimately pulls him out and helps him regenerate?
The Sisterhood of Khan.
And where are they from?
They're from the story The Brain of Morbius.
They remind me of the people in the Labyrinth.
The Labyrinth.
Oh, yeah.
The goblins?
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, they're in one televised story from Tom Baker's like third season. And then there's a few audios, I think, of them as well. Yeah.
Maybe, was it in the Fires of Pompeii that sisterhood looked a lot like them?
Yeah, I think earlier on when that episode hadn't aired yet, people were sort of thinking it might have been them again, but...
But it turned out not to be, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Were they just kind of ambiguous about who they were?
I think they explained who it was in the in the Pompeii episode, but I can't remember what they're called or... whatever now. Anyway.
So they pull the doctor out. He's apparently going to die soon, and they offer him the chance to sort of choose his next regeneration. They say they've like perfected Time Lord regeneration, and now you can choose, you know, sex and characteristics and all these types of things. And I guess he's been fed up with the Time War, and he decides he wants to come back as a warrior. And then drinks the potion and then begins to regenerate. And then we see sort of like a younger looking John Hurt in the reflection of the goblet or something nearby.
Yeah, it's not really super clear, but it is definitely meant to be a like young John Hurt. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. I kind of hope they maybe, like, outside of the actual TV show, but maybe expand a little bit upon like all the stuff that John Hurt did, or like how long he was the doctor. Because I mean, you see him there, and he does look younger in that reflection. So I mean, how long was he, you know, participating in this Time War and fighting Daleks and maybe Time Lords as well? It's kind of interesting.
Have either of you seen The Elephant Man?
No.
No.
Oh, damn it.
Why?
Because that's a movie he was in like the 80s. David Lynch directed it. And if you know anything about The Elephant Man, he often wore a canvas bag over his head.
Yeah.
I was just thinking it'd be funny if it would have panned back and instead of young John Hurt, it was just that bag.
Just tying those two universes together.
Yeah.
And so that's it. So then we get that little bit of backstory about John Hurt's character there. So then we had the 50th anniversary, which I don't want to go through chronologically.
No, we can just sort of talk
about different points. But overall, how did you guys feel about the 50th anniversary? I really liked it, although it was different than I expected it to be.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was really good. So,
what about you, Amanda?
I tried to not have any expectations,
mm-hmm.
And then Tom Baker was in it, so I was pretty happy.
Yeah, that was a nice little touch right at the end, huh?
Yeah, that's like my favorite scene now and of the whole show, and I did not think I was going to get that out of the special.
Tom Baker.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because basically, I mean, all those actors are really great in their own ways, but for me, it always is Tom Baker and Matt Smith. Those are my two favorites, so it's just cool to see them interact together.
Yeah. He really personifies the Doctor. I mean, I guess now... David Tennant, Matt Smith, maybe more so, will be remembered for being the Doctor. But apart from them, I mean, he's who you identify as the Doctor, really.
Yeah, I mean, I love David Tennant, and Eccleston is great, too. But I think as time goes on, more and more people will appreciate Matt Smith. Not to say he's underappreciated now, but just so many people, they're all for Tennant.
Yeah, I'm one of those, to be fair.
I think Matt Smith's better than Tennant, I think.
Oh!
Yes.
I mean, I just... What it is... I really like Tennant as an actor, and I'll watch anything that he's in, picks good projects, but I just like Moffat's style of writing and Smith's style of acting better together than I do Russell T. Davies' writing and acting. Tennant.
No, I do always, I do always kind of wish there'd been a chance for Tennant to be the Doctor under Stephen Moffat.
Me too.
I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, he just makes it a little bit more, like there's more on the line. It's a little bit more compelling to me.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think Moffat does a good job of incorporating sort of these overarching storylines and adds a lot like more like grandeur to the whole thing. Whereas like Russell T. Davis, I mean, every episode for the most part, it's kind of like Monster of the Week type stuff. I mean, he, as it went on, he started to add somewhat overarching things, but I don't know. It felt a lot more self-contained.
Well,
and less,
he brought like a, and I appreciate it, but he brought a lot of camp to it. And what I like about with Moffat is he's willing to make the Doctor often is he's not the good guy and he doesn't make the best decision. And that's what's always compelling to me about that character. And I feel like Tennant definitely could have played that, but it just wasn't written enough in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. But yeah, so the Tom Baker scene was obviously great. And it felt so sincere. Like when he was talking to Mesbitt, like it just was so emotional and so great.
It felt like, felt like not just the fourth Doctor giving advice to the 11th Doctor, but Tom Baker as having played the Doctor.
That's how I felt, yeah.
Yeah, giving advice to the current Doctor.
Yeah.
Mm. I like that, like, they go to a mid-shot of the two of them either side of the frame at one point, and you just see, like, the really old Tom Baker and the really young Matt Smith, and it just puts into perspective, like, how young Matt is. It makes him look so young compared to Tom Baker, and it's just like, oh, it's so good having such an old Doctor on screen against the newest one.
Right. Now, what was the... was there some like allusion to, and maybe I was reading about this online somewhere, but to the idea that it was supposed to be the Doctor, that like that was him much, much later in life, and that he had sort of I don't know, like kind of became that Doctor again? Is that the idea?
It's heavily implied that Tom Baker was a future Doctor that is now the curator of the museum.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, this would be like Doctor... I don't know, say any number you want, Dr. 1 million or whatever. Like,
yeah.
You're never going to see him ever again, so we'll never get closure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty interesting. And then speaking about like the sort of juxtaposition between young Doctors and old Doctors, that was sort of a running joke between Matt Smith and David Tennant, which I thought was really funny. Just him sort of laughing about their mannerisms and just their behavior in general.
Watching it again last night, one of my favorite parts of the episode was when just after Matt Smith had landed in David Tennant's time stream, and he just starts sort of flipping around and, you know, moving. The way he moves looks very much like Patrick Troughton does when he takes off his jacket in like Five Doctors and Three Doctors. It has that same energy, and Tennant has a bit of a – he feels a bit more like a Pertwee sort of foil to Matt Smith as well, which is pretty funny.
I agree. I could totally see that.
Like, even the way Matt delivers some of those early lines, it's very, very like playing up the Troughton side of him, I think, even more.
He just gets so indignant with him.
Yeah.
Like, he's judging himself and he does not like it at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Well, between the two of them, I mean, I love when Matt Smith catches David Tennant and he's commenting about how, like, oh, was he really that skinny and everything like that, and that was a nice touch, and both of them making fun of David Tennant's shoes was also great. And there was just a lot of that. Like, I liked that sort of witty banter between the three of them. It was kind of funny. It almost made them feel like siblings more than, you know, the same person.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying to Mike, yeah.
You know, like, it felt like a couple of brothers who had just, like, gotten together after not seeing each other for a few years and just, like, immediately renewed that, like, sibling rivalry from, like, when they were kids.
Yeah.
Totally. And Grandpa.
And exactly. Grandpa,
who's the youngest one there.
Yeah. And then you kind of had some explanation for why the Doctors, you know, especially Tennant and Smith, are a little bit more kind of goofy, where they, that John Hurt made them this way because of what he had done, that they had to kind of be like this.
I really like that Moffat threw in that. So he's basically justifying complaints that people have that the Doctor's too silly and too childlike these days. Because now the reason is that he's only acting that way because he's trying not to be deadly serious and, you know, mean-spirited or like the Hurt Doctor. He's trying to be the opposite.
Right. He's trying to completely, like, remove himself from that.
I really like that.
Right.
Like, I don't...
I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, aside from Doctor Who, another thing that I am very dorky about is stand-up comedy. And there's so many stand-up comedians that I love that they say a similar thing about themselves without even thinking about it. Just that, yeah, life is awful. And if you don't joke about it, what else are you going to do? You'll just kill yourself. Yeah. So that totally makes sense to me that Moffat uses that as his reasoning.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a cool. And like you said, Nicholas, like it totally, to me, felt like a comment to, yeah, like critics who say that they're a little bit more sort of flighty than doctors of the
all the people
past.
That are like over 40, like, I hate new Doctor Who.
Right.
It's not, it doesn't have enough gravitas.
Right. So that was like his comment to them. But I feel like through John Hurt, he still got to like have them as a voice because all of John Hurt's comments about these doctors so much helped me. Like these were like old Doctor Who fans who just hate these new like young doctors.
Oh my God. The War Doctor is just all the classic Who fans.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think Moffat just went to a Gallifrey base and found some narky comments and then gave them to John Hurt to say.
Exactly. Yeah. I love when he lands there and he assumes that they're the doctor's companions. And so like, he's like, go fetch the doctor for me. Like, they keep getting younger and younger, these companions. I thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah. You're his companions?
That was great. We were talking about Amanda before you got on, Nick and I, but I was kind of surprised and maybe relieved that they didn't position John Hurt as, like, the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way the season finale ended, you know, where you first see John Hurt, it made him seem like he was going to be a really, like, a bad guy. And I thought they were going to have, I thought, like, maybe he somehow came back to life and they were going to have to stop him or something. But I like the idea of them sort of working together and realizing that they're not all that different from each other. And then in the end, helping each other.
Can you guys answer a question for me?
Probably not, but let's try.
At the end of The Name of the Doctor, they're in the timeline, and they see the Hurt Doctor, yes?
Yep.
Yes.
And then we immediately jump off to the 50th. How the fuck do they get out of the timeline?
Well, I guess Matt Smith just walks out.
What?
Yeah, it's implied that he just leaves because he got to the point and saved Clara. He, I guess, could just get out at any time he wanted. Really.
Well, because it's his own timeline, maybe he can enter it and leave it at will, I guess, is maybe the rationale.
They said it'd be like confetti.
He said Clara would be like confetti.
Right, and so would the great intelligence, yeah, but maybe because it's his own timeline, he can, like I said,
he might be able to use his mental powers to keep himself as, like, you know, in one point. But it still doesn't really, it is vague, but it doesn't really know, like, where did Clara come out? Like, she just happened to land in a sealed off part of his time stream, or I don't know.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I know. It's a bit foggy. I think the John Hurt reveal, to me, the John Hurt reveal is like sleight of hand. It's like, pay attention to this, like, mega bomb and don't question anything.
Look over here. Yeah. No Eccleston, look over here.
Yeah, don't ask questions about how any of this worked. Just look at this. Oh my God, isn't this crazy? That's because you're right, because we didn't talk about that at all when we talked about the finale, you know, however many months ago that we did. And now that you mentioned it, it's like, yeah, none of that really should have worked out the way it did. But there you go.
Also, I would have liked it if at some point, for no reason, there was a blinking red light on the TARDIS console.
Oh yeah, that would have been good. Yeah, I like that they brought that reference back from that episode.
For the light at the
from
end.
Last season. That was cute. And so, yeah, I guess the big thing now is that Gallifrey is out there, and it sounds like probably not Matt Smith unless they tie it into the Christmas episode, but I have a feeling this will be an ongoing thing. So Peter Capaldi, it sounds like he will be out there looking for Gallifrey.
Do we get Romana?
Well,
wait, do we what?
Romana. Where's K-9?
I want K-9, yes.
But I don't think Moffat intends to actually ever address him finding Gallifrey or really searching for it that much. I think he's left that in like he was going on about setting up the next 50 years. I think he's going to leave that up to future showrunners. And
that's how I feel.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
I really don't think you're going to see a conclusion to that anytime soon.
No, and I don't think you should. Yeah, I mean, no reason to rush through it. Just have it always out there as something that could happen.
He's always reaching for it. It's clever because Russell T. Davies got rid of the Gallifrey and the Time Lords to sort of have a clean slate. Now, Moffat's technically brought them back, but at the same time, they're still not going to be part of the show.
So it's ambiguous.
They're still basically the same where they were.
Right. It's like
nothing's really
done
changed.
Now, what he's done now is he's just put it like he's put that card back in the deck. It's not in play, but it's there.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it could be drawn upon at some point if they decide to.
If you guys,
how much did you? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was gonna say if you guys could like see that coming back, like Gallifrey. Is there a particular character that you guys have always wanted to see come back? That they haven't brought back?
I only want Ramana to come back.
Me too.
She's the only Time Lord I care about. All the others can die. I don't really care.
We're both awful.
Oh, yeah, all the Gallifrey stories besides the Deadly Assassin in the original run are all terrible. Like,
all the other Time Lords are boring.
Oh, they're so boring. And I was thinking that when I was rewatching the Day of the Doctor last night, I was just thinking the same thing. All of the people in the command center with the soldiers and stuff, like, they're just so boring.
Right.
Like, I love it when he goes, oh, I can't wait to go back to Gallifrey. I love all the good times they had there. And then they show a blank screen and it says, footage not found.
Little Arrested Development reference there.
Yes.
I don't know. I haven't watched enough of the older stuff to really have an opinion of. I mean, I don't know any other Time Lords, really. I mean, I don't know. I have vague memories of watching it as a kid, and I kind of remember the difference between them when there'd be episodes dealing like with Earth or with other things, and like when there would be Gallifreyan episodes, but not enough to really make a distinction. But like you guys said, it's not really a world that interests me. I kind of like the idea more of him being the last one.
I like the idea of him pissing them off again. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. That's true. That's true.
Having somebody that he's got to upset.
He found it over the next couple of seasons, and he landed on Gallifrey. Like he landed next to Timothy Dalton and the Master and all that happening. And 10 seconds after stepping out of the TARDIS, he'll be like arrested and trying to put him on trial or kill
again,
him
again, just like the Sixth Doctor.
Yeah, pretty much.
How much do you guys love when they pull in all the stock footage? Kind of like what we talked about might happen, and had all the doctors come, and
it was cool. They even gave Hartnell, like, they got a sound double to say a line for him, which was cool.
Yep, that was cool. And then I love the little, like, they're all 12 of them are here. Wait, no, now there's 13 or something along those lines. Yeah. And you see Peter Capaldi's eyeballs, which is
and his eyebrows.
His eyebrows, yes. Mm-hmm. That was a nice touch.
It's going to be too hard to wait till August or whatever next year.
Because there'll be the Christmas special and then that's it till August, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
But I thought that was really cool. Did you guys hear that they're going to try to explain, because Peter Capaldi was in Torchwood, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And
did you guys hear that they might try to, he was in the Pompeii episode, but I guess he was a pretty prominent character in Torchwood.
Played John Frobisher.
Okay. And so I've heard that maybe they're going to have to like try to explain a little bit about that, since now you've got a pretty prominent guy from the same universe.
Yeah, Moffat, he did an interview. It's on YouTube. I can't remember who he did the interview with, but he was saying that when the conversations were just happening after Capaldi was picked as the doctor, he was talking to Russell T. Davies, and Russell T. Davies told him, "Hey, you know, I always had in the back of my mind an idea for why he would be in Pompeii and why he would also be in Torchwood." Mm-hmm. And he said, "I can tell it to you and you're welcome to use it if you want." So he told him that, and he was like, "So now I know what his reasoning was, and I don't have time to write it into series 8, but I do want to use it."
Oh, okay.
So that's the last I knew of it.
I just think it's like, who cares? Unless the reasoning
it'll be fun if they do.
T. Davies had was really interesting, but
it might be because look how interesting the end of Journey's End was. I never saw that shit ending that way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, but I guess we just finished a storyline where we had a you know, a girl who was somehow appearing in a bunch of different times, you know, so maybe it would seem kind of strange to now follow it up with a storyline kind of about the same thing.
I just watched Enemy of the World too, the recovered episode.
And that was that good. Has
Patrick Troughton playing a separate character in the same episode. And the story is really good. I think you should, I don't know, buy it on iTunes or try and watch it somehow, Scott, because it's like...
Buy it, dude. It's worth it.
For a 6-part story from the 60s, it moves at a pretty good pace. And
yeah, it's really good.
Yeah,
I'll have to do that. That'll be my old Doctor Who homework for this session.
He's very good in it.
Which this time I won't have. I will have to get to it quick because we'll probably be talking about the Christmas special in just a couple weeks here. So
actually, just moving back to Clara for a second, I was watching it last night, I was thinking she was really not in it that much, that episode, it seemed like. She was very classic companion, like basically sort of making statements and asking questions. I thought it was like she just seems paper thin at the moment. I really hope they do something with her more substantial next season.
Well, I'm kind of worried about that because to me, like, what made her so interesting was this idea of, like, well, who is she and how is she appearing in all these different places and always dying? But now that we have that solved, it's like, what? I don't find her as compelling of a character.
You need an emotional tie.
Yeah, exactly.
I like watching her act and stuff, but...
And I do, and I do like her.
She's a charming actress.
I will say, though, that I'm fine with her being in the background in this because I wanted as much focus
on the doctor
as there could possibly be on Tennant and Smith just being together. That was what I wanted, and that's what I got, and I'm very happy with it.
It just seems like, you know, whoever, regardless of who your favorite companion is, all the companions, whether it be of the new Who, you know, you got Rose, Martha, Donna, Amy, they all had some kind of emotional tie where you didn't question why they were there traveling with him in the first place. And, like, you thought when they unraveled the mystery of Clara, that might explain a little bit more, give you some insight to who she was. I feel like I still have no more insight into what her actual personality is when this guy's not around.
Right.
Yeah.
Plus, because there's just not much there. I mean, what, she's an orphan, we know that, and she takes care of two kids, I guess. She's like,
not anymore, she's a school teacher.
Oh, yeah, she's a teacher now. Yeah,
there's a rumor that came out. I don't know. This is all dumb Tumblr. But supposedly, the guy that we see in the 50th that's telling her that the doctor called.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be reappearing, and he might be a reoccurring character where he's the male teacher at the school.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think that would be interesting.
I would really like two teacher companions again, like Ian and Barbara.
It would be such a callback to Ian and Barbara. The first two new companions for the next 50 years are going to be two school teachers again.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great? Be cool. And if Ian could be the headmaster?
She's teaching history. Yeah,
she was. But that would be pretty cool. And Amanda, to what you just said, which is kind of interesting, all the other companions had reasons for wanting to be with the doctor, but I feel like with Clara, he had a reason to want to bring her along because he was trying to figure her out, not really the other way around, as is like the usual case. So it's kind of like, well, what's their relationship now? And I wonder if, you know, what the future holds for Clara. I mean, will she be just kind of a one or two season companion? Will they move on from her rather quickly? Because I don't really know, what else you do with her.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that actress doesn't have potential. I see where, like, she can be really good, but there's just not enough information.
Yeah.
And at this point, there's just not enough to... I keep thinking, oh, well, we'll reveal something. But come on now. We've done how many episodes? I'd like to know something.
Right.
Well, technically, Clara's only had, like, 8 episodes. 9.
Well, that's true. She hasn't even had a full season yet. Yeah, because she came in at the halfway point. Yeah.
I think that it's going to really, her time as a companion is going to be really tested to see when she's with Capaldi. Like, if she's still exactly the same by the end of season 8, she's pretty disappointing.
I hope the relationship changes a lot. I hope it's a lot more like how the Third Doctor and Sarah Jane were.
Well, I wonder, too, if, and maybe it's kind of building up to this, with Capaldi not only being older, but is he going to be a lot more reserved and calm? I mean, if we found out that Tennant and Smith were so wacky because of them wanting to change themselves from John Hurt, I mean, now that Hurt's not a bad guy anymore and they've fixed everything, is he going to be much more calm?
I just want him to be Malcolm Tucker.
Yeah. just cursing everything.
I think he's going to be more like closer to a classic doctor than Tennant and Smith's were, but
that's how I feel.
I want him to be like
something close to what Paul McGann does, I think, along those lines at least.
Like a modern version of Hartnell. Like if they were going to do that show today,
yes.
Who would be doing that? And how would he play like that kind of character today?
I think that would be interesting to see, like, basically him being a modern Hartnell. It would be good.
Yeah. And I think, and so now that, you know, you've kind of considering that they were young and wacky to get away from being John Hurt, it kind of makes sense to go back to an older doctor now, like, in the context of that. Maybe it was a conscious decision to pick an older doctor because they were going to build that into the story. So, I don't know. But it is interesting. So, I think that's about it. Does anyone have any last things they want to say? I mean, I know we could probably talk a lot more about this, but...
Do you want to talk about the five-ish doctors?
Yeah, very quickly, I guess. It's very funny.
You should go see it if you haven't yet. It's the five-ish doctors. Peter Davison wrote it. Him and his daughter produced it.
It's basically Doctors 5, 6, and 7 trying to get into the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, which is kind of hilarious. I still haven't watched this. I need to do that.
Nicholas Briggs makes a cameo. That made me happy. Can I ask you guys one more dumb question about Doctor Who in general? If you got the chance to like pick somebody to run the show after Stephen Moffat, do you ever think about who you'd want to run it?
Oh, man, I don't know.
There's not very many obvious people. People throw around Mark Gatiss a lot, but I don't think he's right for it.
Yeah, I like him a lot, but I like him to just come in and write an episode or two. I don't know how campy it would get if he was running.
I think that it wouldn't get campy. I think that his style is very much more classic Doctor Who. It could run the risk of becoming too hard to like for new people to come into it.
Oh, it'd be like a kind of a niche audience.
Yeah. Although he does write for Sherlock, so I don't know.
Hey, yeah. How about that? We got Eighth Doctor before we got new Sherlock.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, Sherlock. Maybe we'll talk about. We'll just do a Doctor Who / Sherlock segment next time because they'll be like what, 1 week apart? I think Sherlock is right in the beginning of January.
It'll be the Stephen Moffat Appreciation Hour.
Yeah,
or Criticism Hour.
Yeah, or Criticism Hour. Yeah, depending how it goes.
Well, Moffat has one episode to wrap up all of his ongoing storylines. So I want to see how well he pull this whole thing together at Christmas.
Oh my god, if it happens all off screen, I'm going to be so pissed off. That's the one gripe I have, is sometimes it seems like a lot of his character development is just supposed to happen in the interim of the last episode, and it's like, what the...
Yeah. He does do that a lot, just because there's so much to show, and I guess it's just hard to cram it all in.
Yeah.
Yep. So, alright, well, that will do it. So, Nick, Amanda, thank you as always for being here and talking Doctor Who. And we'll be back shortly. Yeah, I imagine it just after the Christmas one. I mean, you know, the end of Matt Smith. There's no way we're not.
You guys know the name of it or anything yet?
Yeah.
No. Do you? What's the name of it?
The Time of the Doctor.
Ooh. Nice touch.
Name of the Doctor, Day of the Doctor, Night of the Doctor. Doctor, Time of the Doctor.
The blankety blank blank of the Doctor, the blank 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 of the Doctor, yeah. The blank to blank to blank of the Doctor.
I'm noticing a theme here. Yeah, that'll be good. I didn't get to see the little like 10 second like teaser they showed after the end of the
50th. It wasn't that compelling. It's on YouTube though.
Is it? I might take a look. I don't really care that. I mean, they're not going to very
people know that we like this show, right?
I hope so. They know now. So, all right. Well, thanks, guys, for being here. And we'll be back with more Doctor Who talk in, like, 3 or so weeks. So, okay. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye.